led to confusion of CL, and had she known this prior to surgery, she may have made different decisions about her surgery. CL feels that her postoperative course was managed improperly, including pain management, gait disturbances, and deterioration of her condition, which resulted in additional surgery. CL questions whether Dr. DiDucci was credentialed to perform the Cartiva procedure and that his methods were aggressive. Allegation number one is failure to inform patient of diagnosis preoperatively. Allegation number two, failure to inform patient of complications postoperatively. And allegation number three was improperly performing the Cartiva procedure. Dr. DiNucci's response, he responded personally to the complaint, and in summary, he has performed hundreds of these types of procedures and teaches these procedures to other surgeons. He treated the patient conservatively and then offered her a standard procedure, which was an arthroplasty to avoid fusion, and consent was signed. The postoperative course was normal other than possible cellulitis treated with oral antibiotics. There was increased pain and there was reactive inflammation that was attributed to the implant and treated with anti-inflammatories and physical therapy. However, the patient attended four sessions of therapy and has postulated that she may have had a better outcome had she kept all of her physical therapy appointments. The post-op MRI at 3 months showed good position with some reactive inflammation with no infection or necrosis. After obtaining a second opinion, the patient wanted to proceed with a chylectomy and was referred back to Dr. DiNucci. Fusion was not offered as the implant appeared appropriate on MRI. The chylectomy was performed and the medial first MTP indeed was narrowed. The implant appeared appropriate and there was full range of motion after debridement. Did do a medical records review, and in November of 2014, the patient initially presented. She'd had about a four-month history of right first MTP pain and had been treated elsewhere. Outside radiographs showed mild osteoarthritis of the first MTP joint, and the patient was diagnosed with hallux rigidus. The treatment was explained to pathology, reviewed options, and cortisone shot was considered but not given. Cortisone shot was given due to persistent pain. She then presented in January of 2015 with continued pain. The injection lasted about a month with good relief, and anti-inflammatories helped. The diagnosis was osteoarthritis of the first MTP joint. And radiographs showed no formal exostosis or significant joint space narrowing. Further workup was done, and treatment included explaining the pathology again, reviewing x-rays. Multiple labs were ordered, which upon my review were all negative. These included a CBC, CRP, rheumatoid factor, ANA, and CMP. Celebrex was prescribed, and note, the white blood cell count was abnormal at 2.5. Several years went by and an MRI was ordered. The patient then returned in April of 2017, so a little over 2 years after the last visit, with continued right first MTP joint pain, and presented for MRI review. No exam was performed at that visit, and an MRI at SMIL showed severe osteoarthritis at the first MTP joint with full thickness cartilage loss, prominent osteophytes, and an effusion. And the diagnosis was hallux rigidus and osteoarthritis at the first MTP joint. Again, pathology was explained and the MRI was reviewed, and discussion of surgical options took place. She was to return for a surgical consult, which she did a month later, and she is having continued discomfort. The treatment was reviewed, and the options included continued non-operative care and surgery, specifically Cartiva was discussed. A detailed written consent was obtained, including a diagram of the Cartiva implant. The surgery took place on May 11th of 2017, which indeed was a Cartiva. And upon my review, this went uneventfully and was done in standard of care. Several postoperative appointments went by. The first was on 5/15, which appeared very routine. On 5/22, there was minimal swelling, redness, and induration without infection. A walking boot was given and started physical therapy. The X-ray, to my review, appeared what I would expect about 2 weeks after surgery. On 6/16/17, 5 weeks post-op, the patient was complaining of continued pain and swelling. She was upset with her progress and requests for medical records. A physical exam showed minimal swelling. There was some redness, induration, and was in good alignment without hypersensitivity. X-ray, again, showed no abnormalities in good position. In July of the same year, she presented again and was about 40% better. Dr. DiNucci felt that this was standard and normal progress for the patient at this point. Physical exam was unremarkable, and she was going to continue physical therapy and started Voltaren. A little over a month later, in August, an MRI was ordered. She was CL was complaining of pain of a 5 to 6 out of 10 at that point. She did have some swelling. There was not an exam performed at this visit, but an MRI showed postoperative changes of the Cartiva implant. Good position was noted. Reactive marrow edema was noted in the metatarsal with a moderate joint effusion. The plan was use of proper footwear, activity modifications, and a boot as needed, along with Voltaren. Again, about another month later, the patient sought a second opinion from Dr. Zhang. She is complaining that her foot is not doing well, and the treatment is recounted by Dr. Zhang. Dr. Zhang noted that the first MTP motion was limited, but again noted that first MTP is free and easy with 40 degrees of motion. Although this is not clarified, this assumed was to be dorsiflexion, but there was a click with dorsiflexion. On end dorsiflexion range of motion, there was some grating and discomfort. There's pain with medial rotation of the hallux and pain with palpation at the first MTP laterally. The X-rays were taken by Dr. Zhang showing an adequate implant position. There appeared to be some medial impingement on his review. There was some first grade elevation and appeared to be jamming at the dorsal joint with dorsiflexion. The recommendation and diagnosis was structural jamming and was referred back to Dr. DiNucci for surgical debridement. In October, the patient did follow up with Dr. DiNucci, and she's wanting to have a chylectomy or debridement of the joint. She denied any warmth or swelling, but did complain of sharp pain. On physical exam, there was pain in the first MTP joint with medial movement and dorsiflexion and chylectomy, and was considered as well as a possibility of a PRP injection. The surgery was decided, and the preoperative appointment, there was a proper and extensive consent reviewed in November of 2017. On November 28th of 17, surgery, surgery took place. There was hypertrophic bone found over the medial 20% of the joint. There was mild subsidence of the Cartiva. The medial first The metatarsal head and proximal phalanx were debrided. Range of motion was shown to be improved without crepitus. The subsequent three postoperative appointments appeared to be uneventful with improved motion. The last appointment, I believe, was on 12/22/17, which was an uneventful follow-up, but there was no mention of motion or quality of motion at the joint at that time, and the plan was to follow up as needed. But the radiographic review was interesting and informative. The x-rays from 2014 and 15 showed very minimal joint space narrowing at the first MTP joint, mild first ray elevation. X-rays in 2017 showed increased degenerative changes, and the MRI showed severe degenerative changes of the first MTP joint with full thickness cartilage loss. The postoperative radiographs after the Cartiva implant was placed overall showed adequate position without obvious jamming. I thought particularly interesting were the x-rays on September 28th of 2017 from Dr. Zhang, where there's a standing first MTP dorsiflexion view, and upon my measurements was approximately 75 degrees of dorsiflexion at the MTP joint. The postoperative x-rays from the chylectomy, so after the second surgery, did show resection of the medial head of the first metatarsal and base of the proximal phalanx. This does not appear to violate the implant, and although this resection does appear somewhat aggressive in reading the operative report, this is what needed to be done due to the bony hypertrophy without violating the implant. The alleged violations in allegation number one, I feel this is unsubstantiated, although I believe the patient has correctly noted that there are inconsistencies in the diagnosis used in the notes versus the pre- and postoperative diagnosis of the first surgery of 5/11/17. The notes gave a diagnosis of hallux rigidus, and the operative report gives a pre- and postoperative diagnosis of hallux valgus with osteoarthritis of the first MTP joint. And from my review, the x-ray and the correct diagnosis is hallux rigidus and limitus as documented in the notes. Likely the pre- and postoperative diagnosis in the operative report is an error. However, all of the preoperative discussion, the consent, perioperative management, and outcome was not changed, nor was the patient harmed or treated inappropriately or differently by this error. The patient was treated non-operatively appropriately for approximately 3 years. Her pathology was confirmed by x-ray and MRI. An appropriate, acceptable choice and surgical procedure was done in the standard of care. Allegation number two is failure to inform patient of complications postoperatively. I also believe this is unsubstantiated, and from my review of the extensive materials provided, I do not appreciate a substantial postoperative complication from the Cartiva procedure that was done in May of 2017. Understanding this is a relatively new procedure and postoperative recovery has not been fully detailed and can be quite variable. There may be some unrealistic expectations as at the five-week mark, the patient was dissatisfied and asking for her medical records. One should consider that the doctor did not properly inform her of expectations. However, upon my review of the extensive consent and discussions with the patient that were signed in many places, the types of postoperative experiences that she had, in my opinion, were all outlined in this consent. Postoperative period did not seem unusual to me. Erythema and edema and pain can persist for even an extended period of time after these types of implants particularly. As I mentioned earlier, when she did see Dr. Zhang, there did not appear to be significant loss of dorsiflexion with approximately 75 degrees of dorsiflexion in the weight-bearing dorsiflexion view x-ray. Looking at the radiographs, I really did not appreciate significant bony overgrowth on the initial postoperative radiographs from the Cartiva. In fact, the subsequent MRI did not show any obvious complication or readily visible bony overgrowth. The reactive marrow that was seen on the MRI, I would expect at this point, and for many months to follow on MRI, given the scholastic type implant. The MRI further showed that the MTP joint was properly aligned. CL went on to another physician who performed first MTP joint arthrodesis. This is a possibility with any type of implant arthroplasty, particularly in the foot and ankle, and is a very functional operation. Allegation number three was improperly performing the Cartiva procedure. I believe this is unsubstantiated. It appears from radiographic review and review of the operative report, as well as all of the postoperative findings that I've just outlined. The first MTP joint was in good alignment without any obvious complication on subsequent MRI and x-rays. And that's my review.
Thank you very much, Dr. Steck, for a very complete investigation. I have a couple questions or comments on, I'm not sure what page you would be on, but in our document file, on page 420 from my board members, there the patient's intake form, where she indicates on this form that she had gout. And my curiosity is, was this an assumption on the part of the PCP who referred her? Because we don't have any indication if any lab work was done to confirm a diagnosis of gout. The patient was treated with a Medrol dose pack in indomethacin. When I look on page 463, I see that there is no gout listed in the past medical history. And we, you know that, you know, it's gout is not as common in females unless they're postmenopausal. So, and also in the operative report, I find no description of anything in the tissue or the bone that would indicate possibilities of changes associated with gout. There were no gouty tophi or, you know, erosions that would have been descriptive of that disease process. So in my analysis, and what I'm thinking is this was just this indication of gout was maybe something that was the diagnosis that the PCP gave as maybe as a possible or differential when she referred to see Dr. DiNucci. The other that I have that I noticed that I wanted your remarks on, Dr. Steck, was I noticed later when the patient was out of the care of, I believe, out of Dr. DiNucci's care, a Dr. Zavera, I believe a pain management specialist. Pardon me. This was, I believe, I saw this in the note on page 365 when the patient saw Dr. Zhang on 4-4, it says 4-4 of 2018, where the patient had received three spinal blocks. I see a diagnosis of RSD, but then you don't see that anywhere else in the medical records. So if you could give your opinion on those items, I'd appreciate it.
Sure, I did notice that. I guess the referring diagnosis of gout, but in the medical history that I had, I didn't see any symptoms classic gout, I did not review that portion with the pain management doctor with the RSD diagnosis, but again, with gout or RSD, from the description and the diagnosis, it didn't appear that she had classic RSD or gout.
That were my feelings, too. I just wanted to know your opinion there. Dr. Ilano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Steck?
No questions for me at this time.
Very complete job, Dr. Steck. Do you think the patient had an allergic reaction to the implant that could have mimicked the RSD symptoms that she saw pain management for?
That's a good question. I don't recall any descriptions of that in the literature to scholastic type implant. I think it would be very inert, and I believe it'd be more likely foreign body type reaction that the MRI was showing the bone marrow edema. And I think an allergic reaction would be unusual.
Okay. Thank you. That was all the questions I had. Very complete job.
No questions.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you again, Dr. DiNucci. Okay, now we have our complainant, initial CL. And we have, you know, reviewed all the documents that were part of your complaint. So if you could please just give us about a 5-minute summary, and then that will give my board members an opportunity to ask you questions, too. So we're ready to hear your summary. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me today, and thank you, Dr. Steck, for your thorough review, although I'm confused as to why the additional concerns outlined in my report after having left Dr. DiNucci's care were not discussed. For instance, my going back to Dr. Zhang for an evaluation after the second surgery, where grave results were identified, and that is where the pain management, Dr. Zaveri, had taken over my care. It was evaluated through blood work and through additional imaging that I had CRPS and required the spinal blocks. Then after those were completed to help resolve the shooting pain up my leg and the discomfort, when I went back to Dr. Zhang, whereupon his colleague had evaluated my condition and had determined at least 50% of the joint had been resected, and that I would require a fusion of the first MTP. There were some scheduling complications with that physician, and I ended up going to an orthopedic specialist who was willing to treat me and correct I don't know how else to say it, the damage of the first MTP, remove the implant, also take bone out of my hip to replace to lengthen the toe and to fuse that joint. I did have success with that surgery, although not being able to flex my toe now has complicated my gait and how I maneuver and walk, exercise, what I can wear, shoes, etc. I tripped with my good left foot on a curb that was raised 2 inches. I then catapulted onto my left leg. It was like a pole vault. and it shot me in the air and forward 6 feet. I landed on my, this is the result of not being able to flex the toe. It has nothing to do really with the discussion. I just wanted the board and those present to be aware of outcomes that could, that have been damaging to me. I landed on my right shoulder, requiring a surgery, a reversal joint surgery. I wrecked and tore my meniscus in my knee. I damaged my hamstring and my right hip labrum tear, and it's been just a nightmare of medical issues. I was unable to recover from the trip, and I just wanted to point that out. But I've never had gout. I've never been diagnosed with that. I'm not sure how that happened to appear in the report. And, you know, I just want to thank the board for reviewing my case. It has been weighing heavy on my mind, and I appreciate being here and you're listening.
Thank you very much. Ma'am, I do, in reviewing, when you went to see Dr. Zhang again, and when Dr. Flynn, his associate, saw you, and in Dr. Flynn's notes, he says that he saw that there was no deviation from the standard of care. So he also, he noted that, and previously so did Dr. Zhang. And the reason I brought up the gout thing was on your intake form, ma'am. That's where it was listed, and so that's why I wanted to make sure that that wasn't something, like I said, that your PCP just gave as a possible diagnosis, because, again, it was not ever noted in your medical records, and no indication of this on x-ray or in the surgery. So I would... and with the RSD, that, or the complex regional pain syndrome, that certainly can be a complication that happens from surgeries. That's certainly is a possibility, as well as, as Dr. Steck discussed, that's how, the progression of disease can be, and those can be typical complications from, implant surgery. You try, and then if it fails, then the fusion is the treatment of choice. So I will ask my other board members if they have questions for you. Dr. Yolano or Dr. Foreman, do you have questions for CL, please? Gentlemen?
I have no questions for, this is Dr. Lana. I have no questions for CEO. Thank you, CEO.
I have no questions either. Thank you.
No questions.
All right. Thank you so much. Now, Dr. DiNucci and Mr. Crawford are present. So, Dr. DiNucci, if you would like to proceed with your portion.
Yeah, Dr. Campbell, if it would be okay with you, this is Bruce Crawford. I would just make a couple really quick comments, and then Dr. DiNucci would be available to answer any questions you have.
That would be perfect. Thank you, Mr. Crawford.
Okay, thanks. And I'll be very brief. So everything really about this patient's care by Dr. DiNucci was appropriate. If you look at things prospectively, the patient's treated conservatively. Her arthritis progresses to the point over a period of about 2 years to the point that surgery is appropriate. Dr. DiNucci tries first a joint preserving procedure, a joint arthroplasty with the Cartiva, with the idea, of course, if that does not work out, ultimately the patient can still have a fusion as opposed to jumping to a fusion right away. That appeared to have gone well. Dr. Zhang raised this issue about some overgrowth or hypertrophy. The patient comes back to Dr. DiNucci, and he just basically goes in and performs a kind of a cleanup debridement, I'll call it a chylectomy, which was done appropriately as well based on what Dr. DiNucci saw intraoperatively. And thereafter, the care after that was appropriate. It's unfortunate that the surgery didn't work out in the first instance. Obviously, that was Dr. DiNucci's hope, but all surgeons have had that happen. And, you know, the steps here along the way were perfectly appropriate. And if she's obviously ended up with a fusion, which ultimately that can happen. I mean, that's part of this whole process. And so there's nothing about this that was done inappropriately. Fusion generally is a pretty functional surgery, so I'm kind of surprised with all the problems she's had, but I'm not denying that she's had problems. I'm just saying, generally speaking, it's a pretty good surgery. It's tough to comment on the RSD GRPS issue, because if she truly had that, yeah, I'd be surprised, frankly, that a orthopedic surgeon would go in and do a fusion. If she really had it. Now, maybe she had some questionable signs, was treated, and it went away. I don't know. But just looking at this case in terms of how a doctor would logically care for the patient, everything was done appropriately. So we also appreciate your time. Dr. DiNucci is here, and he's available to, you know, answer any specific questions you have.
That's a very good remark, Mr. Crawford, regarding if there was an active RSD present, that a surgeon, as the orthopedic surgeon, would not have done surgery, or, you know, anyone else. So that's a very well-taken remark. So does anyone have any questions for Dr. DiNucci, Dr. Foreman, or Dr. Ulano?
I don't have any questions.
No questions from you at this time.
Dr. DiNucci, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, I believe my full response was sent to the board in written format, and Bruce summarized it well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Well, I think, you know, in my opinion, in this, you know, instance, as in following Dr. Steck's excellent investigation report, that this patient was followed appropriately. There's obviously the progression of the disease. So you can't, you know, when we have underlying disease processes, we're treating the symptom. We're not getting rid of the, you know, you still have the underlying disease process that is present. So the fact that, you know, there's the noted progression in the chart, in the x-rays, and appropriate conservative treatment, and then the option of the surgery, again, offering to try to keep a functional joint, and always knowing that the possibility of fusion is always there. There are post-operative complications that can occur, and feel that those were, I believe, appropriately addressed. These things can happen post-operatively. And knowing a total connection between, you know, it's to assume connection between that fusion and then the other things that have transpired for the patient, you know, there is no way to conclude that that was the cause of all those issues. So I see there were no violations of standard of care. So I would make a motion to dismiss case 20-20-C as finding no violation of state statutes.
Second.
Is there any discussion, Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ulano, any other comments?
No.
No, I believe Dr. DiNucci follows a community standard of care. For this case.
All right. So thank you so much, Noma. So we will take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? So moved. Thank you very, very much. We'll move on to our next case. Thank you very much, Dr. Steck. Have a good day.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you, Judge Campbell.
Pardon me? Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Dr. Polakoff, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, I am here.
All right. We're going to go ahead. Good morning. And we will proceed with the next complaint, which is 20-21-C, Dr. Alan Discont. And Dr. Polakoff is our investigator. So, Dr. Polakoff, if you would please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Board. This is case number 20-21-C, Alan Discont. The complainant, LS, made a complaint regarding concerns over double billing and charging for services that a podiatrist does not provide. And there was an issue of billing for a brace that LS returned in 2012. And then seeing the same bill again in 2013, she raised concern about billing issues. There are two allegations. One, the doctor's office billed for a flu shot, which she had at another location. Allegation number two, billing concerns for a brace in 2012. In review, the doctor's office does coordinate with the federal government with PQRS statistics, and this was explained to the patient. The doctor's office did get paid 1 cent for filing the stats, and the patient stated that she understood. The allegation number one is unsubstantiated, and the patient stated that she understood why. In allegation number two, the patient was given a brace, and she stated that she could not tolerate the brace in 2012. The patient did have a bill submitted in 2012 to her insurance. When she returned the brace, the office did make a statement to the insurance company that the brace was returned, and this bill was corrected in 2013. So the patient did see a notice of this bill on her 2013 claim, which was a return, but she accidentally thought that it was another bill. The patient did send statements that she is concerned about the double billing, but I found no substantiation to this allegation number two. Another concern that the patient addressed is that she was fired in her terms from the office. The office has the right to see who they want to see. They do not have to see a patient. And with the patient's aggressiveness towards the staff and the staff being concerned about their safety with the patient in the office, she was sent a 30-day letter with suggestions for other physicians that might take care of her and offer for her medical records to be delivered to anyone that she sees in the future. The patient is concerned that she was fired unnecessarily. I found no substantiation in the records for this, and I found all violations without merit. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Polakoff. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Polakoff?
No.
No questions for me.
Okay, and we have one second.
And the complainant is not present or is present? Heather. Okay, so there is no complainant present on the line. Okay.
Okay.
And is Dr. Discont present or?
This is his administrator.
Okay.
Susan, Mike.
Okay. We have all your documents and things, Susan. So, I don't believe anybody has any questions for you. One comment I'd like to make, too, is since this goes back to 2012, we have no jurisdiction in that time frame. It's way, way past. It's 4 years.
Yeah.
is so.
We had struggled. We got lucky that we found some information from them on ourselves.
Yeah, yes. So I believe, you know, everything is, you know, is really straightforward on this case. Dr. You know, Polakoff obviously has done her due diligence, and everything is well documented. You know, one of the issues that I have, too, is when a patient asks a doctor to modify medical records, you know, this is certainly warrant, in my opinion, warrants a release from a practice, and that's part of just standard good risk management. So if no one else has any questions or concerns, I will make a motion that to dismiss case 20-21-C against Dr. Allen discount as there were no violations of state statutes, obviously no evidence of a standard of care issues for the patient.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Thank you, gentlemen.
Second.
Does anyone have any discussion on this before we vote? Wonderful. So we'll take our vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Polakoff. Now
welcome.
We will move on to the next case, which is also Dr. Polakoff is also in the investigator on that. And this is complaint number 20-26-C for Dr. Dustin Doyle. Dr. Doyle, I don't believe, is present, but I believe the complainant T.S. is present, Heather? Okay. So I will go ahead now and ask for Dr. Polakoff's report.
Hello, board. This is Dr. Polakoff for case 2026C, Dustin Doyle. The patient, T.S., saw Dr. Doyle for treatment. He is a diabetic, and he had one visit with Dr. Doyle. Unfortunately, there was a mishap in the billing situation where the patient received a bill from Dr. Doyle. The doctor's office did state that the bill was sent to the patient by accident. Unfortunately, the patient received the bill, and very early on a morning, he called to find out about the bill. He was quite upset, and he was advised that the office will open at 7:30, and he was given the phone number for the billing service. The bills are outsourced from this office. The billing service advised the patient that the bill was sent incorrectly, and it will be corrected, that he did not owe anything, and he was pleasant and polite to the billing service. But unfortunately, the office did not have the same respect, and he was disrespectful to the office administrator who tried to help him. And the office administrator stated that she was...
Dr. Polakoff, we lost you there.
That he had a 30-day notice of discontinue of care.
Dr. Polakoff, I don't mean to interrupt. Dr. Polakoff, I need to interrupt you. We lost you for a few minutes, so could you go back just a little bit there? I'm trying to remember we should. You were talking about the response to the helpfulness of the billing person.
Okay, I'm so sorry for it. The billing service stated that the patient was respectful, and he understood that it was a mistake that he got the bill. Unfortunately, the office staff, he was not respectful to. He had on a recording profanities and an angry tone to the office staff, and he told the office staff that he will be in that morning to discuss it. The office staff was very scared, and it was the office decision to terminate care and send the patient a 30-day letter. The patient is upset that he was terminated, he did nothing wrong. He was upset, and he would like this addressed. In violation of state statutes, there was no marriage.
Pardon me, sir. You will have your turn. Dr. Polis, I will call on you. Dr. Polakoff is needing to complete her report, and then we will ask her questions. Then it will be your turn. So be patient, okay. Please.
In review of this, in the medical records, I found that the doctor's office appropriately notified the patient that he will be transferred to another physician of his choice. I found that there was a mistake in the billing, but the doctor's office corrected it as soon as they found out about it. And according to state statutes, which is the only thing I can review on this case, it was unsubstantiated.
Thank you, Dr. Polakoff.
You're welcome.
Let me see if I had any. And I do recall, Dr. Polakoff, that in the complainant's summary that he presented, or in his complaint, that he told the office he would not come back. So not being dismissed from the practice is kind of, a moot point. In his opinion, I believe.
I agree.
My board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Polakoff? Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilano, do you have any questions for Dr. Polakoff?
No questions.
Okay. Thank you.
No questions.
Thank you, Dr. Polakoff. Now, we have our complainant on the line. And your initials, sir, are CS. So if you would just, like I said, you can give us your summary. We've read the documents that were presented. So if you could limit your comments to about 5 minutes. And then if my board members have any questions, they will be permitted to ask you. So please proceed.
Okay. So a couple corrections do need to be made. As was stated, I was very polite to the billing agent, but there's a reason for that. The billing agent was polite to me. From the moment I was transferred to the Miss Christine, the lead in the office, her attitude was absolutely abysmal. She was very rude, very pointed, just from the get-go, and having lost an entire night of sleep as a result of this billing error, she was just very pointed, very callous, very rude. There was never, oh, I'm sorry that this happened to you. I'm sorry that this mistake caused you to lose a night of sleep. I'm sorry for the duress. There was none of that. There was no remorse. There was no understanding, no compassion. And that is what made the difference in how I treated them, is how they treated me. I'm very much a mirror. If people are kind and professional towards me, I am kind and professional towards them. I received no kindness, no empathy, no professionalism from the person I spoke to on the phone at the office. And I just want that noted. It is also worth noting that I very specifically in the messages stated, I will come to the office to warn other patients that you are doing this, that you were, at the time my knowledge was, they were surprised billing me. I went to the doctors, the podiatrist, Dr. Dustin Doyle, to get examined for diabetic neuropathy, and he offered to trim my nails and scrape a couple calluses while he was at it. And from my perspective, it seems like they charged extra for the nail trim and the removal of the calluses, but they didn't tell me that they were going to charge extra, so I thought I'd just been scammed. Anyway, I basically threatened to come to the office to warn other patients that they might try to do something similar to them. I at no point made any sort of threats that would make them fear for their person. And in fact, I consider it slander that they painted me in such a light. It's also worth noting that in the original bill they sent me, they attempted to charge me, pardon me, for services they didn't actually render, namely nail debridement. They said they debrided 10 nails. They did not debride my nails. They trimmed them, which falls under basic routine foot care. So I believe the reason that the billing was, that there was an error to begin with, was because they were attempting to commit medical insurance fraud. And I actually have the bill with me, right in front of me, that says, let's see, where's the line? 11721, the bride nail, six or more. And when I was on the phone after I had hung up on Christine and called back to speak to the other person, because I could not speak to her without losing it because she was so incredibly rude. And I spoke to the person at the front desk, whose name I do not remember, and I tried to tell him this, that there was, that the listing of the nail debridement, which was not performed. And he was speaking over to me, and he was incredibly rude. He was like, yeah, no, that's the callus removal. And I'm like, no, sir, the callus removal is listed under trim skin lesions down below. And I didn't have six or more calluses, so the nail debridement cannot be referring to the callus removal. And as I was trying to tell him this, he was repeatedly speaking over me. And then I heard Christine in the background being incredibly rude, saying things like, just ignore him, just hang up, like very loudly, loud enough that I could hear as I was speaking to the other person. So my complaint is actually regarding the absolutely horrendous and disrespectful treatment I received after I had already been caused so much duress that I had lost an entire night of sleep. So it's just their conduct was absolutely, completely unprofessional, unacceptable. It caused me to have a mental breakdown. And that is why I did not hide anything. I said I was very emotionally charged. I was very rude. And I will not deny that, but I believe my rudeness was justified by their rudeness, if that makes sense. So aside from an attempt to commit medical insurance fraud, actually, I don't know. I have to check with my insurance provider to see what the final itemized list ended up being, because if it still includes the nail debridement, then they have absolutely committed medical insurance fraud. It's the billing, and then it's also just their conduct and how they handled it. It was mentally and emotionally damaging for me. And then to receive the letter after that, claiming I had left threatening voicemails, I have the letter with me as well. Just to make sure y'all can still hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay. This letter is serving as a formal notice that you will be discharged as a patient from sole foot and ankle specialist 30 days from the date of this letter. During the 30-day period, we will be able to provide emergency care only. I will no longer be able to provide care to you because of the verbally abusive language and used towards my staff and threatening messages that you left at our practice. At no point did I leave threatening messages. I left very angry. My tone of voice was probably very high. I probably called them sociopaths because, from my perspective, they were trying to cheat a disabled person out of $200 for something I could have had done at, I could have had a mani-pedi for $30 and gotten the same results. Anyway, point is, I felt like I was being scammed, conned, cheated, and so I called them things like sociopaths. But at no point did I ever threaten to come to the office for anything less than warning other patients of the standard of care that I received, that something similar might happen to them. That's the only thing I threatened to do. I threatened to take them to court if the bill went to collections, because I've been trying to build my credit, which as a disabled person is very hard to do. And if I had to take a huge blow to my credit, which I would have had that bill been legitimate, it would have been a major, major blow to my life plans. So that's the only kinds of threats I made. So to be painted as some person who threatened them, who treated them poorly, when it was them who treated me so poorly, it was like spitting in my face it was salt in the wounds, especially after I had already received notification over the phone, and then they send a letter. And as it was already stated, none of this is necessary. It's just petty, because I didn't want to go back to them anyway. I said in the messages I did not want to continue receiving care from them after this incident. So it just feels very petty. It feels like a personal attack on me. It feels like provocation. It just feels like they're trying to I don't know how to put this into words. I sometimes struggle with communication. I have Asperger's. But yeah, it feels unnecessary. It feels like harassment. And it's, the whole ordeal was so taxing that it can't be. I can't. It needs to be punished. Something needs to be done to prevent it from happening again, to prevent it from happening to someone else, so that it's over. You know, I need, I don't know how to put it. It was just not okay. It was not okay the way they treated me. I treat people the way I want to be treated, and I treat people with respect unless I'm treated otherwise. And like the lady on the billing office, she was very respectful. She said sorry. She was very empathetic. And that was it. You know, I wanted to be treated with respect, and I didn't receive that respect. And so after dealing with Christine, I just lost it. You know, I was already stressed because of the bill. I was already stressed because I'd lost the whole night to sleep, and she just completely drove me over the edge. And then the other person that I spoke to, and then she was speaking over him, and he was speaking over me. It was just an absolute unprofessional debacle. And they can't get away with that. I can't let them. Like, something, I have to obviously pursue any channel I can to see that they at least get a slap on the wrist or something, because it was terrible. And like, imagine if someone else who was even less stable than I was subjected to this treatment. Like, imagine, like, I'm pretty all together, unless like I'm put into a really stressful situation, but like, people shouldn't have to deal with this, you know? And then to be painted as the aggressor, to be painted as this person who just doesn't respect people, as the investigator sort of did paint me. Because, you know, like there's the reason. There's a reason I was respectful to the lady at the billing office and not to them. And I feel like it was just, like, kind of glossed over, you know? Anyway, that's all I have to say on the matter. Okay. I can print, or I guess I can scan and send in an email, but the bill that I was sent, so you could see that they did indeed try to charge me for services that weren't actually.
Yeah, let me address that with you, sir. While we appreciate hearing your story, this has come down to kind of a he said, she said, because none of us, you know, we weren't there, and we appreciate hearing your concerns. But as far as the initial complaint you made, now you're talking about billing fraud. Well, we can't really discuss that with you because it's not part of your initial complaint, and that part was not investigated. So that is something that you're going to have to address on your own later. That's not, like I said, not within the complaint that you presented to this board. And again, like I said, there's, you know, the he said, she said of how people were treated. And, you know, I agree we should all treat with each other with kindness and respect, and can appreciate the angst that you felt. But again, like I said, we are not here to judge professional behavior. We're here to determine if there was a violation of a state statute. And as per the report from Dr. Polakoff, she has noted that the mistake that was made was corrected. And so that has been addressed. It was unfortunate that it happened, but it had been addressed. So as you know, there is
no, sir, pardon me,
I'm still speaking. There is no violation in standard of care, and that's what we are here to determine. Like I said, you have options to go down other paths regarding your other concerns, but that's not part of your initial complaint, as I said, so it cannot be addressed at this meeting today. So I would ask if my board members have any other questions for this gentleman. Dr. Ilana or Dr. Foreman?
No questions at this time.
No questions for me.
Thank you. Mr. Rhodes, do you have a question?
No questions. I would like to make a motion to dismiss 20-26-C with no violation of state statute or standard of care.
Do I have a second?
Second the motion.
Thank you. Any
second
discussion?
The motion.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lano. Any other discussion from my board members? We'll take a vote. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Now, CS, you are more than welcome to contact Heather at the board office if you have questions. All right? So like we said, you know, you have other avenues. So thank you for participating. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right. Let's go back now in our agenda to our to four, which is a review for the previous meeting, board meeting minutes. January the 13th of 2021, our general session board meeting minutes. Does anyone have any concerns with those minutes? Seeing none or hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the general session board meeting minutes as written from January 13th, 2021. Have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion on that? All right. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. B, our executive session board meeting minutes of January 13th, 2021. Does anyone have any corrections or additions to be made? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the executive session board meeting minutes from January the 13th, 2021, as written.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. So moved. We'll go on here to B, which is issuance of licenses. We have two, Dr. Jeff Jensen and Dr. Scott Schindler. Go ahead and take Dr. Jensen first. He's the interim associate dean at the podiatry school at Midwestern. Looks like his application is meets all state statutes. He's paid his fee. His license in Colorado is of good standing. So does anyone have any concerns with this application? If not, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Jensen's completed and in-order application for a regular license to practice podiatry and to issue the license upon receipt of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Dr. Scott Schindler, he is applying via comedy. When everything is in order here, and when Dr. graduated in 1982, of course, the old PM Lexis or the APMLE exam was not present, the part three, he has had listed four malpractice cases, but appears that they were of small value and nothing that had anything to do with standard of care. Has a current non-disciplinary action against a license in South Dakota that is expires in on June 30th of 2021. So Everything is in check. Does anyone have any concerns in of this application? Or questions for Heather? All right. Seeing none, then I would make a motion to accept Dr. Schindler's application for a podiatry license via comedy and to issue the license upon receipt of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ilano. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. C, we have our compliance update for Dr. Farrell regarding nerve decompression surgeries and his email to Heather at the end of January for this meeting in February noted that he has did not perform any decompression surgeries in December of 2020. Apparently not in January either. So we just continue with that compliance updates. Next is Heather's report, Executive Director's report.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Legislation is on my report, and I'm actually waiting to be let into the Zoom meeting. Both bills, SB 1283, which is the board's continuation bill, and SB 1284 are being heard today. We are number 7 and 8 on the agenda, so I'm not sure when, but I will let the board know what happens with that. I provided a current budget update, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And I'm happy to answer any questions about the complaint log as well. Board members that are present do have a current complaint log. I've not added any complaints to the log since I sent board materials. And that's my summary.
All righty. So, summary of current events. Does anybody have any summary? Current events to report. Okay, and the next is the legislative update and discussion. So,
yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. The majority of the bills that are in my memo were stalled last year. There are a few new ones, so please let me know if you'd like me to summarize any of the ones that were introduced last session. Some of the new ones is, which I thought was kind of interesting, there's a bill to rename Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. And then there is the only other one that I saw that was new this session is regarding telehealth. And there was a telehealth bill last session, but this expanded on that. It defines telehealth. It states that a person who's licensed in another jurisdiction but not in Arizona can practice telehealth in Arizona. The board would have jurisdiction over certain aspects of that licensee. It also states that a podiatrist or a health professional can write a prescription without seeing somebody in person. This bill has not yet been heard, but I'll continue to track it. And those are the two that I found that were new this session. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any questions on any of the other bills.
Thank you very much, Heather. Okay, so next on our agenda here is the call to the public, and we have no public present to call. Does anyone have any items they'd like to see placed on future meeting agendas? Okay, and our next board meeting will be March the 10th, 2021, 8:30 in the morning. Thank you all for agreeing to start the meeting early so that Heather and I can be ready to go to the legislature meeting when we need to. And that is in this boardroom C. Okay. So at 9:13, does anyone have anything else they'd like to discuss before adjourning? All righty. So seeing that all our business is completed, I will make a motion to adjourn this meeting at 9:13 a.m. on February 10th, 2021. Do I have a second?
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone, have a great day.
Bye. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.